Before we dive into today's episode, I want to let you know that today's conversation does contain triggering language around recurrent miscarriage loss, fertility, IVF, and pregnancy. And if you're in a season of waiting, this may be triggering for you. While we hope that our story brings you hope and sunlight in a really dark season, we also understand that it's a very emotional time, and we respect your decision. If you choose to skip listening to this episode, please know that I will be back next week with business content. You can also hop on over to the blog, which is thevirtualassistantstudio.com/blog if you're looking for resources to help you grow, scale, and market your business. I want to thank you if you do choose to listen to today's episode, because this episode is basically my entire heart, and it is also the reason behind why the Virtual Assistant Studio came to fruition. If it was not for our fertility journey, I guarantee that I would have never started this beautiful business, which gives me the life that I have today. I am also super excited for you guys to get to meet my sweet husband, Joshua Holmes, who is on today's episode chatting with me about our experience. I thought it was only fitting that when I told the story of our fertility journey, that he joined me, because I could not have done it without him. And I thank you guys for listening in and donating the next 30 minutes of your day. This is going to be a two-part series, so this is part one, and you can expect part two next week.
Hey there, I'm Amanda, a Southern mama with big city sensibilities. I'm the girl that took a daydream and built a profitable virtual assistant business all in the middle of a global pandemic. Now I work from home alongside some of the biggest bloggers and influencers while running a six-figure online business. I'm taking you along for the ride as we dive into business, marketing, strategy, and real life as a female entrepreneur. I'm all about simple, easy, actionable steps that get real results. This podcast is for the dreamers, the doers, and the go-getters. So let's kick imposter syndrome together and pull back the curtain on how to actually make money online. Get ready as we dig in, do the work, and tackle those big dreams I know you've been dreaming up. This is the Bold Business Podcast. Today we have an extra special guest on with us here at the Bold Business Podcast, one of our first male leads. He is the support and hype person behind the Virtual Assistant Studio, and that is my sweet husband, Josh.
Hey guys.
Welcome. I'm so excited for you guys to be able to just hear his account. So we're going to be diving in today into our fertility journey. And as much as I could talk about this all day long, I think it's really important for you guys to hear his take on our story and also what it's like from a male perspective going through this, because so often we hear the female perspective, but there's always that support person that I feel like just doesn't get the credit that they deserve. So I figured we could walk you through just our journey of getting to Beckham and then where our head is at with sweet baby number two. And I also polled you guys on Instagram and allowed you to ask some questions for both of us. So we will do those at the end, which we're super excited about. Okay, so Josh and I got married, what year was that?
2016.
Oh yeah, that was like a test, guys, and he passed. We did get married in 2016. So we got married in August. It was so hot. Do you remember how hot it was?
Hot, humid, and just wet. all at the same time.
Yeah, and everybody told us, like, it's good luck for it to rain on your wedding day.
That's
and
right.
We had all the luck because we had all the rain.
We sure did.
But when we got married, we had been engaged, well, rewind. We were dated for, like, 4+ years. And then we were engaged for 1.5 years. So we were together for 5 years by the time we got married. And we knew we wanted to start a family right away. So we were married in August, and then we were pregnant by that December. And I don't know if you remember, but we had planned a trip to go see your family.
And that's right.
I think it was, like, maybe even right after Christmas, possibly New Year's. And originally, I think you were just going to go up there for a few days and hang out with them. And I was going to stay back, but then when we found out I was pregnant, we wanted to tell them the exciting news in person. So we booked, like, a last-minute flight for me. And I think your family kind of knew, too. Like, oh, I think they're going to announce a pregnancy.
They definitely felt like we were keeping something from them. They knew something was definitely
happening
for sure.
Yeah, so we announced it in December, and we had our first appointment scheduled for, like, as soon as we got back. So that would have been our 8-week appointment, which I know a lot of people wait to tell family members until, like, the 8 or 12 week mark. But we were just so excited. We wanted to go ahead and tell immediate family. And honestly, I mean, it never even crossed my mind that miscarriage would be an option. Like, I never even thought that that was, like, a possibility. I always just thought, like, we would get pregnant and have a baby and have a family and move on with our life. Like, I never even considered that to be a possibility.
I never considered it also because I never really knew anyone who went through a miscarriage. I never knew anyone in my family that went through that. And it's just one of those where you think, hey, let's start this beautiful family in this journey, and you get married, and the next thing is to start the family, and you hope it works out, and you get pregnant, and you have this beautiful baby, and life goes on, and you start this little family together.
Yeah, and I think it was the same for me, too. I mean, I didn't know anybody that had a miscarriage before, so that just thought was never in my mind. So that to be said, we went to our 8-week appointment. We were all excited. And I remember going into the ultrasound, I guess just so naive because I didn't even know what to expect. And of course, this was pre-COVID, so Josh was there with me. And it was very quiet. I remember it being very quiet. And the ultrasound tech, which, long story short, it's so funny because that same ultrasound tech has been the same ultrasound tech for our entire fertility journey and was with this new baby too. So it's just interesting how it all comes full circle. But I remember her saying that the baby was measuring small, and this was after, like, a while of searching. And then she did find a heartbeat, but the heartbeat wasn't super strong. And so they were like, go back to the waiting room. I'm going to have the doctor talk to you. And we were just, like, so shocked because we're expecting it to be this, like, joyous moment of celebration where, you know, they print off the picture and it's just exciting. And we were like, what is happening?
I remember going in there, the silence in the back of my mind, something was definitely wrong.
Yeah. And then so we went to see the doctor. After we went into the waiting room, and then we went and saw, like, the actual OBGYN, and I feel like she kind of reassured us. She's like, you know, sometimes this happens, like, no worries, we'll set up another appointment, we'll do another ultrasound, like, try not to stress, whatever. And so I think in our head we just thought, like, oh, okay, this is just, you know, a fluke, we'll go back to our next appointment, everything will be fine. And when we went back to the next appointment, again, a lot of long silence. And then she eventually told us that she could no longer find a heartbeat. And I remember you're at the OBGYN office, and there's, like, all these other women there, women that are, like, you know, getting their pap smears done, women that are halfway along in their pregnancy, and everybody's at, like, a different stage. And there I am sitting in that waiting room, and I'm just, like, bawling. Because I can't possibly wrap my mind around the fact that there is no heartbeat. Do you remember sitting in that waiting room? And I'm trying not to cry because there's other people in there and it's very quiet. But at the same time, it's like, what else are you supposed to do in that moment?
Yeah, you ask yourself, is this really happening? Is this really happening to us? Why is this happening to us? And there's no way this is happening.
Yeah. And I remember not even believing it to a certain extent. Like thinking like, no, she must have read it wrong. Like, that's not right. Or what if they made a mistake and we move forward in the process and like the baby was always healthy. Like my mind was like trying to fill in the gaps because it couldn't even wrap its head around the fact that like this was a reality. Because again, like so naive about the whole thing. And that I think was the first time that I even realized that like one, just the way that they like brushed over things, the doctors, of like, oh, well, this is common, it's no big deal. Like it's a lot of like the language that you hear so frequently that can be very hurtful. Like, you're young, you can try again. This is God's plan. You know, maybe something was wrong with the baby. Like just a million excuses, which are not helpful in the moment. And not helpful after the moment either, but just all the typical things that you hear. So long story short, we went in to see after the ultrasound tech, same thing. We went in to talk with the OBGYN and she explained to us what the different options were since there were no heartbeat. And we decided that we would move forward with a DNC. So we scheduled that. And that was a whole medical procedure in itself that I was not prepared for at all. It was very emotional and it was just such a trying time. And it was so, I mean, like, how do you tell people who you just announced your pregnancy to, like, weeks later that you're like, oh, just kidding, we're not having a baby? And then you also have the flip side of that of you haven't told anybody, you know, like as far as coworkers go or friends and stuff. So like you're going through this whole experience kind of alone. I'm sure you probably felt that way too, especially being a guy. It's like, how do you explain what's going on? And then you're probably getting those questions from friends and coworkers like, oh, are you guys going to have kids? And when do you think you'll have kids? And people mean well, but then it's like, how do you go about even responding to those questions?
Yeah, people make it sound like it's so easy to get pregnant. It's not. It's everyone has their own journey.
So that was in like January, February. My timeline's honestly a little bit fuzzy at this point because it's been so long. But after that, the doctors told us, you know, you're young, you're healthy, keep trying. And we didn't really know what other options we had. So that's what we did. And to our dismay, I mean, we just assumed because the doctors would say like, oh, this is really common. A lot of people have a miscarriage and then they'll go on to have a completely normal pregnancy. So in our heads, again, trying to fill in that gap of like, how could this be happening to us? We were like, oh, well, surely that'll be us. So let's try again. And we did. And that was not the outcome. And so they literally just kept telling us like, well, try again, try again. And I think the most frustrating thing was I was trying to advocate for myself without really knowing what all the different options were. And I was telling them like, this is not normal for somebody that's in their mid-20s, has no prior health issues. You guys are looking at my insides and telling me everything's fine. How could I possibly be having miscarriages? And I think that that's the most frustrating thing, is not really having a solid reason why something is happening. And they would just say like, well, just try again. And it was hard because it's not like a game that you're playing. Like, well, one, that's a life. But also, I mean, you have to think about like a timeline of trying again. Like, so you go through that process of a miscarriage and, you know, it takes like a month to recover from that. And then by the time you can like wrap your head around the thought of even trying again, and then actually getting pregnant and then being pregnant for 8-12 weeks and then losing the baby, like, those are long stretches of time that really takes, I feel like, a mental toll on, I know it was, for me, it was really challenging, like, so many really high highs of, like, we had so much hope, and then, like, very low lows of, oh, this is happening again. How did you feel during that time frame?
I felt sad. Really, I just felt, you know, again, why is this happening to us? I felt like, what is, you know, you always ask the question, is it us? What are we doing wrong? But it just kept circling back. It's nothing that we're doing wrong. Certainly for both of us, I know we felt frustrated and just helpless. We were looking for answers. We were asking around, doing our own search, and what can we do? And at the end of the day, we were just, all we had each other, and all we had to do was keep trying and keep hoping for the best.
Yeah. I think really just holding on to that hope that one day it was going to happen, I think, was so key for us. And I mean, it wasn't all bad. Like, we were married, and it was pre-pandemic, and we were still, like, enjoying life and hanging out with friends and going on trips and doing fun things. But I think there was, like, this underlying sadness that was kind of there. I know, at least for me, it was, especially on, like, really everyday things that you wouldn't think of, like walking through Target and you, like, pass by the baby section. It would be like the tiniest reminder, then that's when it would hit you. Or like if you were having a conversation with a friend or a coworker and, you know, they innocently ask you, oh, do you have kids, or do you want kids, or when are you gonna have kids? And it's kind of like, you know, like, what do you say? Like, yes, we would love to have kids.
You hold back and you.
So we went through that process probably for a year and a half in that cycle before I was kind of like, okay, enough is enough. We have to figure out another path for ourselves. Like, whether it's that we do testing and get some answers, or we start a family a different way. And I know we were talking about so many different options. Like, are we going to adopt? What would that look like for us? Do we want to do IUI or IUD or IVF? Like, there's so many different options out there. And it was actually a family member that had sent me a link to this article all around, because she knew what we were going through. And I found the doctor who published that article, and he was a fertility doctor here in Atlanta. And so I went on his website and I made an appointment, because he was all about discovering the root cause of fertility issues and then picking a treatment plan, whether that be trying naturally or IVF or whatever. So we went to our fertility doctor, which is Shady Grove Fertility here in Atlanta, and we can't say enough great things about them, because obviously they gave us our first miracle baby. But we started the process with them, and I had no idea what to expect. I feel like we just walked this journey so blind, because we had nothing to compare it to, for one, and we really didn't have anybody else who had walked the journey before us to be able to, like, guide us in a roadmap. So we set up the appointment, and I remember it like it was yesterday, walking into this building in Atlanta and going up to the offices and sitting down, and this sweet man, our Dr. Perlow was his name, he's retired now, and he's asking us so many questions, and they do our blood work, and I remember, like, I've never seen so many vials of blood in my life. Do you remember that? They did it on both of us, too.
They did. I've never experienced anything like that. I remember them taking blood from you, taking blood from me, doing all this blood work, and, okay,
This is the real deal.
This is the real deal. And they pretty much told us, we're going to make this work. This is going to happen. And we're going to bless you guys with this beautiful baby.
Yeah. And so I think that right there was what we needed sort of to keep going in the process, because we've been clinging on to hope for so long, but at the same time, you can only hope for something that doesn't really seem to be happening before, like, that hope starts to dwindle a little bit and you start to think, okay, maybe this isn't our reality and we need to think about other options. So long story short, we went through the testing and we found out a couple different things, but nothing that was a huge indicator for why we were having the recurrent miscarriages. And we did decide to move forward with IVF, which for us, we felt like was the best option. So that's the route we went. And this was a long process. I mean, do you remember what month we went in? And I think it was like...
Ooh, I don't remember the month.
I think, so we had our first miscarriage. It was like 2017. I think by 2018, like beginning of the year, that's when we first went to Dr. Perlow. And then it took about 6 months to go through the process. And we actually had another miscarriage while we were going through the process with them before we had decided to do IVF. And so we didn't actually start the IVF process until the summer of 2018. Yes. The timeline is fuzzy, guys. But I remember it because we had a family trip planned with your family. We were going to Disney World. And you and I had discussed with the doctors that when we got back, that's when we would start the IVF process as far as, like, the medications go and doing the transfer and all of that, which is, you know, a lot. And that was kind of going to be like our last hoorah before we like really committed to the IVF process. And kind of again, do you remember being on that trip and like we were with your whole family and like nieces and nephews, and you know how it is with your family when like there's a bunch of people together and it's like loud and wild. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to have one of these kids possibly. Like, this is so crazy. Or, you know, we could be on a family trip a year from now and be holding a baby. Like, we're really wrapping our minds around that. So that was kind of fun. So we got back and we started the IVF process, which, again, we went into totally blind because we had nothing to compare it to. And I think, honestly, there's a little bit of beauty in that, because not knowing can sometimes be better than knowing, because it doesn't leave you with all these fears. I mean, how did you feel going into IVF? What were your thoughts?
For me, the scariest part was the shots. Me giving you the shots every week, that was scary for me. I was like, I have to jab this needle into my wife's belly. I just couldn't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, it was crazy. We did learn a few tips and tricks along the way. I feel like we made it made it a little better, but it was, I remember the first time you had to give me a shot, I was like, you have to do it. Like, you, and it'd be like 1, 2, 3, and then there'd be nothing happening. He's like, I can't do it.
That was so hard for me. You have this 3-inch needle that you have to pierce someone with, and it's just, it's something where it's like, this is not right. This can't be the process. And I did not like any of that.
Yeah, it was not ideal, but we made it through.
Yeah.
After a couple of days, it became more normalized.
It did.
Like anything, but I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It wasn't fun. Like, I wouldn't be like, yay, let's go do that again.
I felt like I was going to hurt you.
Yeah, that was not an ideal situation. But at the same time, I think when you get to that point where you've been through so much that you're kind of like, okay, if this is what I need to do in order to have the family and the life that I want, then I feel like you just overcome that mental block and you're like, okay, let's do it.
We got to do it.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, go. Here we go.
So we went through IVF and we got really lucky because we only had to do one cycle and it was successful. And then we were pregnant with Beckham, and it was, it was still one of those things where we knew we were pregnant, but we still had that fear because our issue wasn't getting pregnant. Our issue was with recurrent loss. So we were very much holding our breath. I wouldn't even say until the 12-week mark. I would say until the 16-week mark. We were very hesitant to tell anybody. We really didn't talk about going through the IVF process with people unless it was like very immediate family. One of my coworkers knew because I had like some weird things that I had to do at work and stuff. But other than that,
I remember from, everything that we went through, from the miscarriages, IVF, and then Beckham being born, it felt like it was the longest journey I ever been a part of.
It was definitely the longest journey. I don't think we even told people that we were pregnant until we were like 20 weeks. And we didn't buy a single baby item until after 20 weeks because I remember, so we started the process of IVF in July of 2018, and then we didn't even purchase a single baby item until I think it was like end of January, February of 2019, because I have a picture documenting it of our first trip to Bye Bye Baby. Do you remember the first time we went to Bye Bye Baby? Oh my gosh, that place as a new parent is like, whoa, it's way too much.
Overwhelming.
There's so much stuff there. I think we gave up on the first try. We didn't even do the registry. We sat down with the people and they were like all excited and, oh, yay, baby. And we're like, okay, sure. And then we were like, this is too much. And we ended up leaving. And we had to go back a second time and actually do the registry.
We don't need this.
I don't even know what some of this is. Oh my God. I'm like, maybe we need it all. I don't know. You don't know. So that was definitely interesting. But fast forward, Beckham's pregnancy was definitely a lot different than this pregnancy for sure. Beckham, I had extreme nausea. I threw up all the time. It didn't matter what time of day it was. And then I was working my corporate job still at that point. So I wasn't running the business. So I was on the go constantly. I was traveling. I think Beckham and I, when he was in utero, went to like 5 different states in the time and all by myself too. So like I would drive, I would fly. We went all over the place, New York, Florida, South Carolina, like all up and down the East Coast. And it just, I didn't even think twice about the whole pregnancy thing because again, I was like, I don't really know if this is like happening. So I'm just going to keep moving forward in my life and we will figure out the baby thing when it gets here. And good thing, honestly, probably thankful for your mom and my mom because they were like, guys, you need to get your stuff together and pick out a bassinet and stuff, a car seat, like tell us what to buy for you. And they blessed us with a beautiful baby shower at the end of April. And what's crazy is we gave birth to Beckham a month later.
Yeah.
And it was
shortly after that.
Because I was induced with him because I had preeclampsia, which is like a whole nother story in itself.
You poor thing. You were so blown up.
We still like look back at those pictures and laugh because it doesn't even look like that the feet and limbs could be attached to my body. Because I was so swollen from the preeclampsia and also from like going with work and being on my feet constantly.
Continuously on your feet. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was definitely a sight to see, that's for sure. Like I literally, no shoes would fit. I had these one pair of, they were like fake Birkenstocks, but they were made out of plastic that I could loop on the very last loop and they kind of fit, but even when I would take them off there'd be indentions on my feet. It was just so funny.
Poor feet and ankles and toes look like you got stung by multiple bumblebees on your feet.
Yeah. Like, I remember people being like, you should share some photos of your baby shower. And I'm like, no way are these photos making it onto the internet. Nobody needs to see me like this. Which I'm so glad we can laugh about it now, because I know obviously preeclampsia is very serious, but it all worked out. So anyways, going through that entire process was just so draining. But then having Beckham, I think, you know, we were just so elated to be parents and to have this miracle baby. I mean, do you remember like those first few weeks? I think we had him so early. He was like right at 5 pounds when I gave birth to him. Luckily, we didn't have to stay at the hospital super long. He wasn't in the NICU or anything like that. But when we brought him home, he was so small that we had to do very strict feeding routines to make sure that he was getting enough food and he was growing at the pace he was supposed to be, which he did. And we did great with that, pat ourselves on the back. But I think there were definitely a few weeks where he was only sleeping like 45 minutes to an hour. And honestly, I didn't even care because I was just so excited to be a parent. And I think you were too. I mean, we would just, that time looking back was so precious.
It was. I remember bringing him home. I remember him being so small, so cute, doing a lot of the skin to skin because we had to make sure to keep his weight up. Mm-hmm. I remember us just tag teaming it. I mean, we were on the couch together. You're over there pumping milk and everything, and we're working shifts, you know. We're doing the skin to skin and we're doing the feedings, and we got our notebook of what time we're feeding Beckham, and you know what, you know, when did he go to the bathroom, and then we're back to breastfeeding and we're back to feeding. And it was just that process again. We were on it.
Yeah.
I
think honestly looking back, that period of time where we had to wait for him made having him so much sweeter.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just so thankful. I didn't care that he was waking up every hour to feed or that he just peed all over me and the bed, like, which there were many times where that happened. Like, I was just so happy that he was here and he was healthy.
I remember just, it's funny. I remember in the delivery room. And then I was able to walk out of the room, and then I'm calling at work, and I remember calling a few family members, and I just remember, he's here, he's finally here. And I just remember being just excited and just shocked, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm a father.
Yeah, it's the so best happy. Feeling.
It's
so awesome.
It's great.
Definitely, I mean, I know like everybody says, kids change your life, but I feel like that was such a significant time for us too. And it was also kind of like it was all worth it, you know, like it gave the hard seasons so much purpose.
I'm over here doing a little happy dance because you just finished another episode of the Bold Business Podcast. Is it just me, or was that filled to the brim with juicy goodness? If you're anything like me and are wanting even more business, marketing, and strategy tips coupled with real life, follow along with us over on Instagram at the Bold Business Podcast. And be sure to check out the show notes for any free resources, links mentioned, or coupon codes and more. And if you loved this episode, will you do me a favor and go ahead and tap that subscribe button and leave us a review? Until next time, and remember, let's be bold together.